Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. A very blessed Advent to you and all of yours. I hope it has been proceeding in a fashion that can be called blessed. I'm sure there's plenty of blessings there. I guess the question is always, have we availed ourselves of them? And even if you haven't, Christmas is coming. Jesus
loves you. Yet an extra week this year.
Do we have an extra week of Advent?
It's great.
Yeah. Basically. I mean, this is as long as Advent ever gets.
Father Hugh used to get so mad when Advent was short.
Yeah.
You know, I hate it. Okay. But I don't know. Can we have a shorter Lent? That's the one that I want shorter. I do not have the spiritual stamina for Lent, maybe why I need Lent. But I don't know about this 40 days thing.
You need all 40 of those days.
Si. I would like Lent to be maybe a day and a half of giving stuff up. And
I don't know if it's any consolation, but this year Easter is actually going to be on a Sunday.
So knock it off, Joe. Knock it off. It's not funny, dude. I'm not falling for this. Actually, Christmas is on a Sunday, too. Just got to do a little bit of housekeeping before we continue. Flannel Panel is where we talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. Zach, don't do that again. Gave me a heart attack before the show. I didn't know if you were coming back. I thought you were gone. I thought you had left us. Oh, no, I'm just playing with you, Zach.
He's not. You turned the board live about, 5 seconds before we came
on. Like, it's okay if the host sits down 5 seconds, but if the board op does, everyone's scared. You scared me, Zach.
I really needed water.
Oh, you needed water. All right. Okay. Well, that's important. Yeah. We don't want a poorly hydrated board op. Yep. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, for people wanting a blessed Advent, it's not too late to start.
No.
And a really good way is to do the O antiphon. So you can just look up O antiphons, which are the final days before Christmas. And it's really simple. So we've been doing a prayer, a relevant Bible verse. If you don't have a relevant Bible verse, you can skip that part. And then the relevant stanza from O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, because all of the stanzas, or like all of the verses from O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, are from one of the different O antiphons. Go ahead.
I was just saying, if you're in the habit of praying Vespers, which is a practice that we do here at Catholic Answers and one that I recommend to everyone, and thank our dear friend Father Hugh for bringing to us a number of years ago, right now you will say the O antiphons. They're right there in the Vespers, right before the Magnificat.
I know. I think, especially in the modern world where there's so many demands on people, I see this with young Catholic parents. Like, I blew it for Advent. You fed your children. You kept going. You didn't blow it for Advent. Relax. Jesus loves you. It's going to be okay.
The nice thing about Advent with little kids, it's fire. What we've been doing is we light the Advent candles. And I've got, again, a 1-3-year-old. They love the fire because we do that. We do some prayers, and then they get to blow the candles out, and then they compete to see who can blow out more candles. The only downside so far is my daughter's hair caught on fire one time. But other than that, it's been great.
Get lit on fire, it's not a minor downside. Don't say that like it's no big deal. One of my children went up in flames, but that's the only drawback.
Briefly. Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Once an Advent is not a lot to get your hair caught on fire.
No, I guess not. If you want to get in on the conversation, 888-318-7884. And I don't know how to talk about the next topic without talking about Joe Biden. And I don't want to do so in a way that is political, but just moral. Because I heard the story told on National Public Radio, and I chose not to use the audio because it just really wasn't that interesting in audio, as much as I love to use national public radio audio. But it was a kind of a celebration or a reflection on how Joe Biden advanced morally to the point where he signed the marriage bill that just passed the House and the Senate, and did so, you know, forcefully defending the equality of marriage and gay marriage.
That's what it's called, right? The Marriage Equality Act.
Marriage Equality Act, right. But I was struck by they played this audio from earlier Joe Biden, and then they played audio from later Joe Biden. And I'm not picking on President Biden. It's just that the country and lots of our fellow Christians, Catholics, made the exact same transition at the exact same time, where people were like, no, of course it's not equal. And, you know, I'm not for marriage, but for civil unions or whatever people were saying. And then the Supreme Court changed its mind, and then the entire country, as far as any moral objection it had to making an equivalency between gay marriage and marriage, it just collapsed. So I want this new bill is in many ways morally offensive, but it's very hard to talk to anybody about the moral offense. The people just don't want to hear it. They don't they see that as bigotry. They've decided it's bigotry. And they don't want to hear about that this is a morally offensive thing to do, to equate the marriage of a man and woman to any other union of which human beings are capable.
I think there is some conversation to be had, and it begins with our talking to other Christians. And Christians and by other Christians, I mean Christians other than ourselves. I don't mean non-Catholic Christians, because Catholics have a lot of culpability here as well. Boy, I could talk for an hour on this thing, but a couple of observations. One is so much of this spins on how cleverly the enemy uses words. So calling this thing the Marriage Equality Act is just an offense against language. But when the three of us are in a concentration camp somewhere, it will be because, you know, of the enforcement of the Freedom From Religion Act or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, there's going to be a Freedom of Religion Act, which means that anyone has, because this is the next step in this, by the way, anyone has access to the sacraments of the Catholic Church. So that's going to be the Freedom of Religion Act.
Do you think so?
Oh, it is definitely coming. It's now how the church reacts to it, of course, we can have some speculation about and what we hope individual men and women will do. But to the point of saying something to Christians, this battle is the this current defeat in this long going battle is not a surprise, and it is the it is exactly what we could have expected to happen going back to let's start with the Enlightenment, but really making manifestation in the Revolution in France, where divorce is made into a sacrament. And even in the 19th century in this country, divorce is not especially difficult to come by. And then you throw contraception into the mix, which also is an enemy of marriage. And then beginning in the state of California, no-fault divorce. Add into that all the jolly and lighthearted representation of alternate lifestyles on situation comedies, first subtly and now not subtly at all. This is a cultural battle that has been going on for a long time. And the error that Catholics and other Christians have made is they have fought this battle in the political realm and to a degree in the cultural realm when it is a moral question. And it has to do with what marriage is. And we use, as we do in the pro-life movement, sort of the language of civil rights. There is no right to marry. There isn't a right to marry. We need to begin first by understanding what marriage is and what it's for. It's for the organ, and prior to Jesus making it a sacrament, it is for the organization of the sexual drive, for the rearing of children, for the uniting of families, and for the management of the inheritance of property. It wasn't even a matter for the state until well into the modern period. And insofar it was a matter for the state, it was for this question of who is going to inherit property. And yet now, beginning with so-called conservatives and Republicans, I'm sorry, I'm getting my high horse here side, because there's something to say. Beginning with Republicans, we had this whole Defense of Marriage Act where we're going to define marriage. We're going to say what it is. The state has no business defining what marriage is. So this is the natural, if you will, if I can use that word, progression of error that has been underway for several centuries.
Let me just before so Joe, I just want to ask a question before I let you do that. What do you mean there's no right to marry? Because there's a certain way in which, of course, there's a right to marry. That is,
there's not a civil right to marry.
I think there is.
I don't understand what you're saying when you say there's not a,
because the family is prior to the state.
That certainly is true. And of course, marriage is necessary to civilization. But even the church puts restrictions on who can marry.
Oh, so you're saying there's not a, there's actually not an especially, absolute especially right to marry.
It's not total license.
There's not right, but you have to say there's a right to marry. Like if, a state, like say the Chinese communists, they can't come in and say you don't get to marry.
They
can't come in and say you only get to have one child if you are married. If they do those things, they are committing grave sins against the family.
I think this is the problem of using the language of civil rights in a moral and anthropological question. And so, no, of course not. The state has no authority to say who may or may not marry. The church, after she becomes involved, when our Lord makes it a sacrament, and then the church eventually and mostly in the Middle Ages begins to organize this natural human institution, the church absolutely has business saying who may and may not marry. It is. But this is not a matter for the state. The definition of marriage and the regulation of marriage is not a matter for the state.
No, it would be as if to say that
I would push back. I know this is maybe a strange position, but I think that it is. And I think there's a reason the state has been involved and why the church has happily cooperated with the state, even corrupt states, in marriage. And the reason actually has to do with what you said before, that you know, marriage at its heart is about families. It's about children. And so if you think about just the biological need, when infants are born, they're born incredibly needy. And if they're going to survive, they need adult supervision. If they're going to thrive, they could really use their mother and father. They can get by without that situation, but every metric we have suggests that's going to be a worse outcome most of the time. And so given that, both the church and the state have an interest in encouraging the biological mother and father to stick around in a stable union that can provide a home for future citizens, for, you know, however you want to understand it. So, like, there are all sorts of downstream consequences that we're dealing with socially because of the breakdown of marriage. So in that sense, the state has a tremendous interest in seeing that marriage thrive. What it doesn't have an interest in is in romance. In other words, if you redefine marriage to just be, well, Tommy and Jim love each other very much, so therefore we're going to call them married, the state has no reason to be involved in that. If marriage is about family, if it's about kids, then by all means, the state can be there, can encourage it, it can regulate it, it can make sure it's not easy to run out on your wife. It can, you know, it can do all those things to make it more stable of an environment for kids.
And but it can't define it. I think one of the things Chris is saying the state has no business defining it.
Contrary to reason. But, I mean, historically, there were certain parameters the state had. You know, you couldn't marry a close relative. You know, it had to be opposite sex. And all of those parameters were in accordance with natural law. Well, the problem now is that the parameters the government is trying to create are inventions that are contrary to natural law. They can't redefine it in opposition to nature. In the same way that, you know, killing is a moral issue. It's also properly a civil issue. But if the state said, now we think killing's okay, well, they wouldn't be acting appropriately because civil law can't trump natural law. You can't have a law that mandates or encourages an injustice.
We can agree here. I think I have a lot of difficulty talking about a human activity that's been going on historically that is something that manifests itself in the everyday practice of human persons, and we find it in the historical and the anthropological record. And for most of that time, for the majority of that time, insofar as it was regulated by the extended families that were being, by the way, themselves united in the marriage. In the modern state right now, I'll concede that there is a reason for the church to cooperate, provided that the church has the say of what marriage is. That's not the business of the state. But now, when we have a state that is so obviously an anti-Christian state, as we do now, run by anti-Christians, including our president, who describes himself as a Christian, and he's a baptized Catholic, I get that, but all of his legislation in the moral realm is anti-Christian. And so he has no authority whatsoever to say what marriage is and, by extension, regulate it.
We do have to take a break.
Martin Luther King says an unjust law is no law at all. And he's quoting Aquinas is quoting Augustine. So there is a longstanding tradition that when the state says this immoral thing is moral, we just say you don't have the capacity to say that.
And here's the problem that I want to address when we come back, that there's a reluctance to talk about the morality of the acts that are committed within gay relationships and straight relationships, to use the jargon of our era. But we cannot explain to people or ask people to take any interest in our position about the definition of marriage if we don't talk about sexual acts. But I'm gonna leave that
there. It is for the regulation of sexuality. That's what marriage is for.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back, right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
EWTN has its own official YouTube channel with tens of thousands of videos covering just about every conceivable topic of interest to Catholics. And best of all, it's free. Every day, EWTN adds new TV shows, live events, devotionals, homilies, and specials to its YouTube channel. Visit the EWTN YouTube channel today. EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kelly, your host. We're talking about the new marriage bill that was passed by the United States Congress and signed by the President of the United States in a quite celebratory fashion. There's one part of the bill that I am 100% for, but I believe it was included in the bill only for propaganda reasons, and I would like to mention that. It is now a federal law that every state must recognize interracial marriage. This is a fact.
Finally. That was a looming threat.
I'm glad we settled that.
All right. Okay. I'm sorry. I have to be the guy that says that is not the business of the federal government. Listen.
Is not the business of the federal government under the American system. That's always been the case. Marriage is not in the Constitution. Marriage is part of – it's state law, not federal law. But that ship has sailed, Chris.
I am in favor of interracial marriages. I think that's great if you fall in love with and can start a family with some of another race. That is good. That is, and the Church says as much.
It is good.
This is.
I'm worried about where the rest of this sentence is going.
Well, I know the word "but" is going to really change this whole tenor of this.
One, it's it is what Cy said. It is pure propaganda. And by the way, I react badly to that line being in there because it now equates interracial marriage with so-called gay marriage,
which it is not. Right, because the moral calculus
that is
of interracial marriage.
That is morally offensive and is personally offensive to men and women of different races who are marrying each other.
Right, like Moses and his wife.
Yeah.
But the other thing is
it's just not the business of the federal government.
Say it again, Joe.
Start passing pro-life bills that include like Section 1 outlaws abortion, Section 2 you can't murder toddlers, and then be like, okay, go ahead, vote against the don't murder toddlers and unborn babies.
Right, and maybe we should do that. I don't know, because maybe propaganda is the way you get things done. I don't know, but it clearly is an act of propaganda that it was included. I mean, if you had just said, here's a bill to say that interracial marriage is permitted everywhere at all times in American states and territories, you would have had 100% on both sides of it. Nobody would have.
Yes.
So this is all a pretense this is what we're doing. We're cleaning up some business that has not been well attended to previously. That's not what's happening. But I do want to talk about sex for a minute. And so I will warn the parents. That's what we're going to talk about, because we got to talk about it. People will say, you think the love between you and your wife is not equal to the love between me and my partner? And the answer is, it depends entirely on what you mean by love.
Or equal.
What do you mean by
it? Well, didn't you say it's not equal to the love that I have between me and my partner? Yeah.
Right.
But it isn't. It's not the same thing.
Well, what I would say is, quite bluntly, the sex is not equal. Because one of them is the way that the human race is propagated, and the other way is the misuse of the human body. There's no other way to talk about that and get to what the point at what we're trying to get to.
Yeah, yeah.
The, two bodies were... the way I
go ahead, Josh.
Sorry, the way I present it, because this is something people for some reason really struggle with. If I say, what are your lungs for? What's your respiratory system for? Right. People will be like, oh, yeah, obviously breathing. What's your digestive system for? Oh, digesting. I'm like, what's your reproductive system for? They're like, well, who can say?
It's a mystery, right?
Pleasure. And it's like, well, no, once you realize the reproductive system has something to do with reproduction, and you only have half of one, it's the only system in the body, it's incomplete, and you need a member of the opposite sex to have a fully functional reproductive system. That's all we're saying. Like, we are not just saying, hey, Leviticus says don't do gay stuff. That is not the argument. The argument is at the level of nature that what marriage is and what reproduction are inherently between a man and woman, and no government has the power to change that because these are biological realities. And so,
and anthropological realities and social realities that have to be regulated.
Ancient Greece, they had all sorts of like homosexual man, boy, man, teenager, man, man kind of stuff that they not only permitted, they really valorized.
Yeah.
But marriage is still between a man and a woman. And you can't just say that was homophobia because
they weren't homophobic.
They just understood something so basic that they didn't need a Bible verse to get it. And so I will say this. One of the ways I think we've hindered ourselves is too often we make these cases from divine revelation. We make these cases from, well, here it says in the Bible. And so as you get a country that's less and less Christian, and as you get a country in which Christians don't feel comfortable legislating based on their Christian convictions, then they say, well, I get what marriage is about, but I can't legislate that, so I've got to vote for gay marriage. Yeah. And instead, we need to say, look, this is against nature. This is something that a pagan had no right not to know, and it's only in the last 50 years we've gotten dumb enough as a culture that we suddenly don't remember what marriage or sex is about.
Something on the order of 80 Catholics voted for this act.
It doesn't surprise me. Yeah. And it doesn't surprise me at all, because I do think, I mean, as much as we can
80
have
Republican
this
Catholics,
the three of us can have this conversation and say whatever we want and use up all the oxygen in the room. But the truth is, the objection to same-sex marriage has evaporated. There's no one who's running on it. There's no one who's discussing it. It has evaporated.
And my friends,
we lost.
There are prelates in the church right now. I don't know who is the Belgian bishop or various German bishops who are pushing this. And of course, they're saying, oh, right, well, no, marriage, that specifically has a theological term, but we have to find some way to bless the unions of these lifelong friendships. So even within the church, this language creep of what a word means, like Alice and Humpty Dumpty having the conversation, it doesn't matter what the word means. It means what the man in power says it means. The church is going to have to face this reality in my lifetime, which is not much less, really, in terms of human history. But what happens when the government of the United States tells Catholic priests, you have to witness or bless this union? That is coming. That's coming.
But even before it comes, though, Chris, I mean, the accommodations that people are willing to make even now are ridiculously small.
I mean, churchmen.
If you're a priest or if you're a church or, you know, then fine, you don't have to go along. But everybody else in every other circumstance must go along. This is the equivalent of being a racist if you don't go along with this. And let me tell you, it's not the equivalent of being a racist. It's not. That's not what – that's an insult to – well, I just think that's a tremendous insult to those who fought for the logic that racism is just stupid and immoral. Objection to homosexual sex being valorized is not stupid and immoral.
Let's explore that connection a little more, if we could. You know, like, a lot of the time this comes up with, like, you know, make the cake, that kind of argument. Like, oh, okay, this wedding cake maker, you're saying they have to make a cake celebrating a same-sex marriage, and if they don't, therefore, they're homophobic and they're bigots, and this should be not just morally frowned upon, but it should actually be illegal, where they can be punished by the government for not cooperating and celebrating a gay marriage. This is stunning, given that, you know, when they were trying to get their foot in the door, it was just like, oh, no, we just want civil unions.
Yeah,
we just want marriage, but if you don't like gay marriage, don't worry about it. It's like it just keeps going further and further, which is why I think Chris is right. Like the European prelates who are saying just a little bit here in the church. We know what this is.
That's not.
It doesn't stop there.
No, of course it doesn't.
But,
no,
let's go back to the cake. Oh,
go ahead. Real quick.
No, it's good.
I want a cake, and I want it to be white power. And a cake maker says, I'm not making you a white power, white supremacist cake. That is not discrimination against me on the basis of race. That is a that is discrimination against an idea, which is totally legitimate and moral and appropriate. You shouldn't have to endorse an idea that's repugnant. And the fact that the powers that be don't find gay marriage immoral, that's a them problem, and they can't legally impose that on cake makers or citizens.
But they will. They will. We'll be right back with more of the Flannel Panel, talking about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective on Catholic Answers Live.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
Here's a question. Is it really possible to be friends with someone who died 2,000 years ago? Maybe the problem is that we've grown way too comfortable with the story of Jesus. Nice man, right? Taught us to love one another, said not to judge people. We celebrate his birthday every year. It's time to put away this small, safe version of Jesus, says Cy Kellett. Nobody that bland could have transformed the world. In A Teacher of Strange Things, Cy presents Jesus Christ undiluted by sentiment, with all his radical words and deeds uncensored. Do you know someone, your son or daughter perhaps, or maybe your mom or dad, who needs the friendship of Jesus Christ? Do you? Order your copy of A Teacher of Strange Things by visiting shop.catholic.com today or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you. Have you enrolled in the Catholic Answers School of Apologetics? Let me ask you a more important question. Do you believe as a Catholic that you have an obligation to share the Catholic faith? In fact, the Church has answered this question, and the answer is that all confirmed Catholics are obliged to share the faith. It's actually in canon law. Catholic Answers is here to help you fulfill that obligation. Our School of Apologetics courses will equip you to help all the people you come in contact with understand what the Church teaches and why. A great place to start is with all the Catholics in your life. Learn the art of apologetics from the best of the best and start sharing the gospel today. Visit schoolofapologetics.com. That's schoolofapologetics.com.
Welcome back. Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. Chris Check, our guest. This is the Flannel Panel. Flannel Panel is when we get together and talk about the news of the day from a Catholic perspective. We're talking about what's in the United States called the Respect for Marriage Act. Is that Respect for Marriage?
Yeah, Respect for Marriage Act.
Respect for Marriage Act, which enshrines... which insists upon
that is so obscene in its wording.
Yeah, it is. But I mean,
intentionally so.
Yes,
they're trying to be.
Yeah. Oh sure,
but
we troll each other. That's what we do now. Who supported it?
Yeah, true. Bob Barr, the guy who was the original sponsor of the Defense of Marriage Act.
Totally believe it. Completely believe it.
Did he?
Yep.
Yeah, because I mean, there is in America. Yeah. There's a strong libertarian thing and. I know that many Catholics are attracted to the libertarian thing, but just try to square that with Catholic social teaching. You can't do it. And the idea that marriage is just a contract, I guess, it's just a contract that people enter into whatever contract they want. Here's another problem that we don't talk about. The instance of straight men being willing to marry statistically goes down in every society that legalizes gay marriage. What is that about?
What is that about?
You know, because there's argument when people were arguing for gay marriage here in the United States where they would say, what, is marriage so fragile that your marriage can't take it if I can get married? And I believe the answer is yes, marriage is that fragile. And sometimes things that are precious are fragile. It doesn't have anything to do with its value to say that it is fragile. And if you start messing with it, you may shift something that's of such core value that that you don't know the consequences of it.
I think if so, obviously these things are correlated. But if I'm going to try to suggest a chicken and egg thing here, it's the one that precedes the other. Christians have given up on marriage. They've given up on marriage. So what we were just trying to gather I speculated that the average marriage is something like 7 or 8 years right now.
Yeah.
And somebody can look up that data. No,
Zach looked it up. That's right.
Yeah. So that's not marriage.
No.
That isn't marriage. Marriage is a permanent bond that ends with death.
Yeah.
That's what marriage is.
Right.
You can't change. You cannot.
Not always murder, but always ends with death.
You cannot change this definition. So Christians, Catholics included, the way that we range from participating in divorce ourselves, or, you know, we have a friend who can I say this? This law, what do we call it? Respect for Marriage Act, whatever. You and I are not going to change that. Joe's not. None of the people listening to it. This is not going to be changed. What we can change is our own attitude, our own understanding of what marriage is, and then how we live that our own lives, first of all, by staying married to our spouses.
Right.
One. So I just want to encourage everyone who's listening.
And not abandoning our children.
Yes, yes.
I mean,
stay married.
That's part of what divorce is and in
guess
many
what?
Cases.
Guess what? I know marriage is hard. It's been harder for Jackie than it has been for me. but it is it is difficult. If your marriage is struggling right now, get a hold of our friends, the Alexanders, there in San Antonio, Alexander House. This was a couple that found out on the same day that they were each cheating on each other, and they saved their marriage.
God
okay?
bless them.
Yeah. So
it's like
get
a piña colada song.
Right. Well. I'm sure the Alexanders,
sorry,
if they heard this,
make levity of that,
what, but. No, but they're doing great work, or Retrovile, or whatever it's called, or something.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the name of it. I knew it wasn't Ratatouille.
So number, right, okay, two for two there, Joe. Great.
Retrovile. I'm sorry. I'm
with the bad
pot him down.
Yeah. So first of all, and then by the way, if there's someone in your immediate family or in your friend group, and they're saying, "Boy, my marriage is hard." That's your chance to say, "Hey, how can I help you? How can I help you restore the love in your marriage?"
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Let's stick this out, because divorce is not an option.
No, it's not. It's not. And I don't know.
Christians, stop pretending divorce is an option. It's not. Divorce is bad.
It's and I have to say, Catholic parents used to be bold about teaching this, and I don't know. Like you said, we gave up. We stopped teaching this to our kids. And there is a glory in marriage when it is undertaken in that spirit, that this is the surrender of the self to this union, without the idea of I got an escape hatch if it don't work out. That's not the case. And it also, I think, when you say that, Chris, it gives us the opportunity to say, because it really should be said, as much as this gay marriage bill or this respect for marriage bill is morally offensive, it's certainly not gay people who ruin marriage. It's not. It has nothing to do with gay people. It has to do with all of us, what we did for whatever reason throughout the 19th and 20th centuries. We worked our way into a situation where we're failing at marriage now.
Yeah. Yeah. Whether we let contraception into the marriage, or we consider divorce as an option, or just, you know, the time when you didn't hold your tongue, when it would have been very easy just to hold your tongue.
Yeah. Right. Don't say that thing. Right. And also, we've put too much pressure on marriage in the sense that people are more and more isolated socially. There's no men's clubs anymore. There's no women's clubs anymore. People, the marriage is the primary friendship all the time. And you know what? There's sometimes where your marriage can't be your primary friendship. It can always be your primary relationship. But sometimes you need to have other interests, other ways of meeting the needs of friendship, because that's asking too much of marriage to make it the entirety of life depends on this relationship. As a matter of fact, many married people are not friends for long periods of their married life. That's okay too. But we've destroyed all these other outlets where people could have friends, where people could have social life, and the burden on marriage to be perfect is overwhelming. It cannot do that job. It's not going to do it for you. It's not going to do it for me. It can't do that job.
I think that's well said. I think it, well, maybe just to piggyback on something Chris had said, the lows seem just inescapably low in the midst of them. And so it's worth hearing the stories of people who are happily married now, who maybe went through some really rocky periods at other points in their marriage. And so in a way, it's a little bit like the crisis of teen suicide, is that when you're first starting out at a thing, whether that's adulthood or, you know, real life or marriage, and things are going really badly, you just think, oh, I've ruined this thing. It's beyond repair. But if you stick with it, I think a lot of people who feel very suicidal when they're 16, 17, 18 are perfectly happy later in life. And I think a lot of marriages that look like they're headed for divorce in year 5, 6, 7, 8
that's end right, up Joe.
Thriving.
That's
and,
right.
You know, so the stat for Chris, the average age, or excuse me, the average length of a marriage that ends in divorce is 7 to 8 years. Yeah. And yeah. So if you can make it through that, your odds actually improve. So it you know, you can kind of see this is where the going gets really tough. You know, you probably have a mortgage and kids and a bunch of other responsibilities, but as things kind of calm down, maybe you reconnect, you forgive each other, you grow.
You know, something my wife and I say to each other, because we did have those, really bad, at least a decade together, where it was very hard to stay married, but we stuck it out. And one of the things that we kind of say to each other now is, like, it's good if your second marriage it happens within marriage, you know, like that do you know what yeah. I'm saying? Like, you have the first marriage yeah. and then you go through this long dry period. Not everyone does, but we did of where it was really, really hard for year after year after year. And then we rediscovered the joy of marriage, but it was to each other. It wasn't, we didn't go somewhere else. And I really feel like, I'm not saying that as a brag. I'm saying that like that, I think a lot of people are missing out on the best kind of second marriage, which is the person you married in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's very well said. I think it's just something that people don't appreciate because it's very easy to quit when the going gets tough. And I don't think it's just because people are quitters. I think it's also because they feel like they've ruined something beyond repair yeah. or they feel very hopeless in it. And there may be some really serious problems that need addressing, but it's amazing how many of those problems can be worked out, or in many cases, will somewhat resolve with just age and maturation and everything else.
Indeed, they will. All right. Well, when we come back, I do want to.
Can I give
you conclude this segment?
Give the great advice from Ogden Nash.
Yes.
About marriage, to keep your marriage brimming with love in the loving cup. Whenever you're wrong, admit it. Whenever you're right, shut up.
Ogden Nash, the highest paid poet in America at one time.
Yeah.
We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back to talk about some more news of the world from a Catholic perspective.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The world over with Rima DeRoyo. Coverage as seen through a Catholic lens.
All people of faith and sincerity need to awaken to this and protect this fundamental right of religious liberty.
Expert analysis.
Does revelation judge history, or does history judge revelation?
Stories vital to people of faith.
It's part of our faith that comedy and tragedy naturally go hand in hand.
Delivered to your inbox every week. Sign up today. Go to EWTN.com/worldover.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Killett, your host. Chris Check is our guest. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. It's the flannel panel. We're all wearing flannel. We finally got that part of the flannel panel down. I do want to get to another story.
Before we do that, can I respond to a comment from the Facebook thread? During the breaks, I like to check to see what people are saying on Facebook. And we were just talking about marriage. And Suzanne Bloomer, who is a saintly woman, I believe John Sorensen's mother-in-law, said, every single marriage goes through that, Joe. The best is yet to come. 52 years and going strong. Which,
all right,
amen.
Suzanne.
What a beautiful witness.
Yeah,
I just want to be clear. I've only been married for like 4 years. Like, the worst is yet to come for us. Like, we haven't even gotten that yet.
When your wife discovers
still,
the truth.
We're still coasting on the honeymoon fumes. And
right.
It's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah.
So...
I when Nathaniel went off to school and the house emptied out, Jackie was really kind of blue for a month or two. But it is a reacquainting that's been magnificent.
Yeah.
The past few months.
Yeah, there are joys to marriage. I mean, it's just that I think people think they can't make it because I have to be honest. Many times, parents didn't make it. The grandparents didn't make it. The aunts and uncles didn't make it. They don't have a model of people making it. People on TV don't make it. The movie stars don't make it, all that. But some movie stars do make it. You just don't hear about them. But but there's I think it's not a cynicism as much as about marriage, as much as I think it's a sense of defeat that nobody can do this now. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. I think, surround yourself by people who've done it well and ask vulnerable questions to say, hey, did you go through this? Is this weird? Because I think you'll often find like, oh no, these are normal kind of things.
Yeah.
And I think, so today actually, we got a babysitter to go out to lunch together. My wife and I, just to like have some time without the kids and just have a little middle of the day date, because it doesn't work to try to do that stuff at night.
Did you get some barbecue?
We went to, I'm trying to do keto. So I went to Fogo de Chão and had a ton of meat. It was Brazilian steak.
Wait, don't try to
do
keto. You just do keto.
I don't know if you've ever heard of how good bread is.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
So, cookies.
Yeah.
Cookies are not in keto.
This time of year.
Oh, cookies are not in keto? Never mind. I take back. I retract all further statements regarding keto. I want to talk to you about something. I mean, we've seen Cardinal Zen in Hong Kong imprisoned this year. We've seen ongoing brutality towards Catholics in Nigeria this year. I want to read you an AP story from earlier this month. That involves an arrogant bully. I probably shouldn't characterize people that way, but I meant to say Daniel Ortega. A Nicaraguan court has ordered that a Roman Catholic bishop remain under house arrest on charges of conspiracy and spreading false news, a government media site said Tuesday. The government website said Matagalpa Bishop Rolando Alvarez has been formally charged with those crimes and damaging the Nicaraguan government and society. The damage that the bishop is doing, that the other Catholics are doing, is they have the odd view that people should be free. They should be allowed to govern themselves. They should be allowed to worship God. And this is the nonsense going on in Nicaragua. And I shouldn't have used the word arrogant. I don't know what's in another person's heart, but I can use the word bully. Daniel Ortega is a bully who's abusing Catholics in Nicaragua. I wanted to mention that before we go. Because
persecuting.
Persecuting. And we often overuse the word persecution. There's all sorts of obnoxious things in the state of California about Catholics and people I know who are trying to run ministries and all that. Nobody's persecuting me. It might be annoying and mean, but it's not persecution. What's going on in Nicaragua? What's going on in Hong Kong? What's going on in Nigeria? This is persecution of the church. And in some instances, I'll be honest with you, what's going on in Australia is persecution of the church. So I just wanted to mention the bishop, Bishop Rolando Alvarez, and the others in Nicaragua, and get your take on that. I mean, it's the same commie stuff we've been up to for years. I mean, communists hate Catholics. It's nothing new.
Marxists,
there. Marxist bullies, I don't know. That's what I got on it. Joe, what do you got?
Yeah, well, I think one of the takeaways I had is Ortega is the fruit of the Sandinista kind of revolution, which was actively supported by a lot of liberation theologians, and there were a lot of religious priests who were like religious order priests down in Nicaragua who stood up to the Somoza dictatorship and allied themselves too closely with a political movement. And a political movement in this case that was pretty overtly Marxist, was Soviet-backed, was pretty atheistic. And so At the end of it, four of the priests who were very closely aligned with this ended up joining the government in appointed positions. Three of them were suspended. A fourth one was laicized. And then Ortega just got progressively worse. And so I think, I don't know the full history, but I think all four of those priests and ex-priests ended up having fallings out with him as he became more dictatorial. And one of them, Edgar Perales, who was the one who was laicized, was actually sentenced to 8 years in prison by Ortega. You know, they, you know, had him yeah. sentenced. He had been ambassador. He'd had this career in government. So it was this really tragic trajectory where they were priests who presumably loved God, cared about the people of God. This care for the people of God got them too involved in a social movement that was too closely aligned with the political party. That political party went south, and it cost them not only their vocations, but even the normal human senses of happiness that you might have imagined.
Yeah.
And it seems like it just has been disastrous.
You know,
if you look, kind of the flip side of that, sorry, is like Ortega's argument is that the bishops were too close to the prior regime. And so the argument kind of works in both directions. If you get too cozy with either major party or with either any kind of political movement, it long-term seems like a recipe for disaster.
I feel like there's a subtext to what you're saying, that we Americans who align ourselves too closely with Democrats or Republicans. I feel like, did I detect a subtext that was there or not there?
You might have detected a little bit of a subtext. I mean, I think, there are going to be issues on which one party or the other is obviously better. I don't mean to suggest right. an equivalence, particularly on issues like abortion or conversely issues like care for the poor. But if you just lose sight of that all-important difference between those who serve Christ and those who serve a party, even if your goals are the same in the moment, you're not actually playing on the same team.
And
if you lose sight of that, it's a disaster.
I think another manifestation of this error is believing that the Catholic Church itself is a political movement.
That's
not
a very grave error. It is not a political movement.
No,
right?
It's an institution created by Jesus Christ for the salvation of souls, for the care of souls. And yet, I think Americans especially, and I don't know, it's the country with which I have the greatest familiarity, but because we are, just so much of our myth is a political myth, our version of the founding, et cetera, I think that we tend to view our religion in America through this lens of politics, and we think of the church yes. as a political movement. It's not. Right. The other thing that I would say with respect to this is not an uncommon story in Latin America. It happened 100 years ago in Mexico, the identical persecution of the church, and soon what we will be seeing in Nicaragua if this persists is the confiscation of church property, for example. I think already some churchmen have been exiled from Nicaragua.
Or escape Nicaragua.
Which is what was happening in the exactly 100 years ago in the 20s in Mexico. And it is funny to think, or funny is the wrong word, but I mean, I puzzle over why these things take the form they do in Latin America and not so much in the United States. Maybe our masters don't feel the need for this kind of overt persecution because we're all, strung out on opioids and pornography,
TV.
Yeah. So they don't need to persecute us so overtly. But I think maybe a better explanation for it is the Catholic Church, whether sacramentally alive or not, in Latin America and in Mexico, and they're certainly are catechetically alive, if that's a good adverb. It nonetheless is. The public piety, public Catholic piety, is an essential part of the culture of Latin America in a way that it is not even remotely part of the culture here in the United States. And so even if it isn't sacramentally manifested or catechetically manifested, it's still there in the public culture and in the social culture, and that's why the Marxists have to declare war on it.
But I do think if I may make a challenge to our atheist friends who say, well, when people are fully atheists, we'll have governments that are based in reason and justice and not in religious superstition. Where's the evidence of this? Where's the evidence?
Literally open any history book about the 20th century.
Yeah, I remember I told a young woman atheist, and in a conversation that probably got more heated than it should have, and I still regret it to this day. But she was a very sincere atheist, and she said, you know, she made that point that atheism would mean a better government, basically. And I said, like the Soviet Union. And she said that they're not atheists in the Soviet Union. That was a political movement, not a philosophical movement. And the Soviet Union had a policy called state atheism. That's what it was called, state atheism. But they won't accept that these are horrible crimes committed in the name of no God, whereas they will obsess over every crime committed in the name of God, all of which are crimes, none of which should be celebrated. But come on. There's a pattern here when atheists take power.
A reckoning is coming.
I mean, yeah, I think I would say this. Like, everyone has to live by a moral code, and every government has to live by a moral code where they say these things are okay, these things aren't okay. Without that, you don't have law. And so you either have a moral code given by Jesus Christ, or you have one that's just man-made and invented. And the man-made and invented ones are without fail worse, and often so far worse that it's the stuff of nightmares. That, I mean, it's not an exaggeration. Look at Friedrich Nietzsche in The Gay Science. He says God is dead, and we've killed him. And he immediately says, this is, you know, the worst crime imaginable. What water will cleanse us from this blood? And his argument is we must become gods. And paves the way very quickly for Nazism. I know, you know, Nietzsche may not himself have been an anti-Semite, a Nazi, but his stuff was certainly used in that direction. And it's a direct line that if there is no God, then there's no check against the state telling you this is the good you must pursue, that's the evil you must avoid. This is why, like, when you see a totalitarian regime, invariably they end up going to war with the church. Invariably, they end up going to war with religion. Like, if you understand anything about the history of the Soviet Union or Nazi Germany or North Korea or communist China, fill in the blank, always there's this part where, and then they heavily persecuted religion. Why? Because religion is offering a different moral vision of the world. Yeah. And so if you are totalitarian, you have a totalizing vision of the world, there's no room for a religious system because that's a threat to that vision.
Not that I think most of our atheist friends would persecute the church themselves. I'm just saying that stop saying like it's some kind of panacea, that government's going to be better.
No, exactly. I don't think atheists are inherently totalitarians.
No,
I think
religion is
an important check against totalitarianism.
Right.
And I think that's an important distinction. Like, it's worth realizing the 20th century actually was worse than any prior century. And it was the least religious century. This is not a coincidence. It's not just the technology got better.
Yeah.
It's actually that the systems by which men live.
The invention of the machine gun.
Yes.
I mean, there were certain technological advances that assisted with the carnage in the 20th century. But I mean, even if you gave a machine gun pick your medieval villain, Richard the Lionheart or everything, he wouldn't have done with the machine gun what the Kaiser did with it, you know. So there's a moral decline that went with that technological advance. So what do we do for Nicaragua? Well, we should remember Nicaragua, pray for Nicaragua, pray for the bishop. I don't know, maybe call our congresspeople and say, why is not more pressure being put on the bully Daniel Ortega to knock this off? I don't know. What else can we do for Nicaragua?
In the Cristero War, the United States was on the wrong side.
Yeah, right.
Under Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah, it is one of those things. I think this is something I wish there had been. You know, there was the Amazonian Synod. I wish there was a Latin American Synod that just looked at this question, that this is a part
of the
world that was really aggressively evangelized for 600 years, and in which the faith doesn't seem to have taken the roots it ought to have in men's relationship with his fellow man. And obviously, there are a million counterexamples to that. Obviously, there are saints abundantly throughout Latin America. And yet the history of the state level kind of questions have been really tragic. It has not been, maybe you could say the same about medieval Europe, but certainly modern Europe is much more peaceful than modern Latin America has been. And given how Catholic the area is, I think it's worth us asking some hard questions about why did we not do a better job evangelizing and changing hearts.
And then there's the matter of the United States. And its relationship with coups and various things in Latin America. But the music saves us from having to discuss that. Joe Heschmeyer, thanks very much. I hope you have a Merry Christmas.
And likewise with you guys.
Si, if our listeners want to do something great for their spouse, and they don't even have to shop for this, they just go to CatholicAnswersConference.com and buy your spouse a ticket to our conference next year.
That's what Missy's getting this year.
She gets to come for free, so.
Well, I didn't.
Catholic
you
Answers
Conference. You didn't say you had to spend money on this thing. You just said give it to her. Chris Check, thank you. Merry Christmas.
God bless you, brother. Merry Christmas to you. You guys are great.
We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.